Yesterday, Monday the 1st of October, I learnt that my dear friend of 21 years, Peter Cogger, a Mitra training for ordination who is based at the London Buddhist Centre, now has additional cancerous tumours to the two already known about. Kind, courageous, loyal friend Peter, this is for you. Become the sky. Kukai's letter to a nobleman in Kyoto. You ask me why I entered the mountain deep and cold. Awesome, surrounded by steep peaks and grotesque rocks. A place that is painful to climb and difficult to descend. Wherein reside the gods of the mountain and the spirits of trees. Have you not seen, oh have you not seen, the peach and plum blossoms in the royal garden? They must be in full bloom, pink and fragrant, now opening in the April showers, now falling in the spring gales, flying high and low, all over the garden the petals scatter. Some sprigs may be plucked by the strolling spring maidens, and the flying petals picked by the flittering spring orioles. Have you not seen, oh, have you not seen, the water gushing up in the divine spring of the garden? No sooner does it arise than it flows away forever. Thousands of shining lines flow as they come forth, flowing, flowing, flowing into an unfathomable abyss. Turning, whirling again, they flow on forever, and no one knows where they will stop. Have you not seen, oh, have you not seen, that billions have lived in China, in Japan? None have been immortal from time immemorial. Ancient sage kings or tyrants, good subjects or bad, fair ladies and homely, who could enjoy eternal youth? Noblemen and lowly alike, without exception, die away. They all have died, reduced to dust and ashes. The singing halls and dancing stages have become the abode of foxes. Transient as dreams, bubbles or lightning, all are perpetual travellers. Have you not seen, oh have you not seen, this has been man's fate. How can you alone live forever? Thinking of this, my heart always feels torn. You too are like the sun going down behind the western mountains, or a living corpse whose span of life is nearly over. Futile would be my stay in the capital. Away, away, I must go. I must not stay there. Release me, for I shall be master of the great void. A child of Shinyon must not stay there. I have never tired of watching the pine trees and the rocks at Mount Koya. The limpid stream of the mountain is the source of my inexhaustible joy. Discard pride in earthly gains. Do not be scorched in the burning house, the triple world. Discipline in the woods alone lets us soon enter the eternal realm. The splendour of the King's Hall, Newcastle University, echoed to the sound of applause as, one by one, robed in black gowns, we shook hands with the Vice-Chancellor. Graduation Day. A journey inspired by the arts, driven by the stresses of a dysfunctional family, painfully conscious of my own social ineptitude. From the perspective of a child's window onto the world, further education, unknown in our family, offered an escape route out of a chaotic, hostile environment and an opening into the genteel, ordered landscapes of social acceptance and respectability. My heart's desire had sought this for many years, above anything else, with single-minded purpose. Roll forward 10 years, and the promised gains had turned to dust. My youthful dreams had proved to be a mirage. The career hadn't taken off as expected. A long-term relationship had ended, and I was living in a shabby rented flat, lost, bewildered as to what my life was about, what reason there was to continue. 2 years later, I came into contact with the Dharma. The worldly winds of praise and blame, fame and infamy, pleasure and pain, and gain and loss, teach us, in the words of Sangharakshita's beautiful poem, that life is king. We cannot always control our circumstances, only how we respond to them. In our lifetime, everything we strive to gain, everything that is of value to us, jobs, home, health, beauty, loved ones, status, recognition, everything sooner or later will go. No thing or person, or even both, can furnish us with complete permanent happiness that we, as humans, desperately crave. Yet the irony is that by losing everything I had placed my heart upon, the blank canvas that was left allowed the Buddha's teachings to be heard. On a beginner's retreat, I discovered unknown resources within, internal depths, not external add-ons. The sincerity and kindness of the retreat team, Buddhists committed to their path, touched something within me, and I gained a joyful, open-hearted awareness hitherto unknown. Turning towards being with the painful loss of youthful aspirations, without losing sight of the benefits these had brought, I began to let go, find acceptance in their loss. in the words of the poet and visionary William Blake. He who binds to himself a joy does the winged life destroy. But he who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. So what is it about gain and loss that blows us around as it does? Why do we spend our lives in pursuit of things, people, experiences, and so on, that we believe, or at least hope, will bring us happiness? Two thoughts spring to mind: instinct and culture. A child will cry if they are hungry or seek comfort. Parents provide shelter, nurture. Instinct drives us to grasp what we need for survival. Culture, on the other hand, is a very different motivator. Education, the arts, sport, and other forms of culture can help us grow, change, actualize our potential, at least to some extent. Cultural endeavours are not without value. Memorable events such as the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games showcase the human spirit in a positive light. The mental and physical grit and stamina inspiring generations to reach for their own star. Such occasions enhance the society we live in. But over and above this lies a layer of consumerism, especially here in the West. Fed on a 24-hour diet of advertising and social media, we can become hooked on the adrenaline of the must-haves. Things or people we think we need, we think will give us joy, make us special, different, unique, help us to feel complete, fulfilled. Intrinsically, there is nothing wrong or bad about the instinctive or cultural drive for gain. After all, we do need food, medicine, and safe shelter in order to survive. Our heart is pained with the anguish of those who have lost these basic provisions, if indeed they ever had very much of them. Typhoon Mangkhut in the Philippines a few weeks ago saw millions evacuated and a substantial loss of life. Through our rolling news coverage, we witnessed the graphic, at times disturbing narrative of the bleak suffering of civilians, including many children, caught up in war zones. Hungry, injured, frightened, their homes destroyed. Cultural gain, too, has its merit. Music, literature, all the arts can open our hearts, touch something very deep within us, lift our spirits, inspire and empower us. The Catalyst Evenings and Writing Days held here at the Norwich Buddhist Centre are a lovely illustration of how we can enrich our lives as spectator or participator. We, living in a democracy, have the freedom, of itself a precious and hard-won gain, to channel our time, and edges in any direction we choose. For myself, I cannot imagine my own life without Bach, Beethoven, Dickens, or chocolate. A few years ago, on a weekend retreat at the Windmill in Burnham Overy Staithe in Norfolk, Satyagita led us on a haiku writing exercise. For some of the retreatants, never having previously attempted to write, they unexpectedly discovered a writer within. The same can and does happen with painting and drawing. What a gain to find this inner jewel. Yet I can also identify with, all too painfully, the hungry ghost realm and the animal realm depicted in the Tibetan Wheel of Life. Beings in the hungry ghost realm have pinhole-sized mouths and protruding stomachs, a ceaseless craving that can never be met, satisfied. Those inhabiting the animal realm are so caught up with consumerism, consumption, that their vision is clouded as to the beings they could become. We all inhabit these realms, unconsciously or consciously, for periods of time. One chocolate, one t-shirt, one holiday is never enough. Barely have I come into contact with one of anything that is desirable, taken possession of it, when I crave more and still more. And horrors, if I experience loss of these things, then my world is at an end. For that loss feels personal, intrinsic, inseparable to who I am. As if I have lost part of me. And this is the very nub of it. The Tibetan Wheel of Life illustrates the chain of causation, the 12 nidanas, or links, that keep us spinning in perpetuity on the wheel of samsara, the wheel of suffering. The momentum of past, present, and future lives. This chain of causation helps us see how gain and loss, along with the otherworldly winds, are the product of cause and effect. Praticca samutpada, conditioned co-production. Imasmim sati, idam hoti. Imas upada, idam upajati. Imasmim asati, idam nahoti. Imasa niroda, idam nirujati. This being that becomes. From the arising of this that arises. This not being that does not become. From the ceasing of this that ceases. The constant ebb and flow of life that would seek to defy our fettered vision of how we can make mundane existence, samsara, work for us on our own terms. The continual self-delusion that if we strive to gain what we think we need, the perfect career, house, partner, we can fix these things in place, shelter ourselves in our modern consumerist palaces, protect, even insure ourselves against loss. The Buddha of our time, Shakyamuni, was born into a privileged background. Shortly after his birth, a sage, Asita, predicted that Siddhartha, as he was known, would either become a great warrior or would give it all up and become a great spiritual master. His father, keen that his son should follow in his footsteps and become a great ruler, was unsettled by the idea of Siddhartha being drawn to a spiritual path, and so steered him in the direction of worldly gains. So the young man became accomplished in swordplay and handling a war chariot. Home was three beautiful mansions, one each for winter, summer, and the rainy season, with every sensual pleasure and entertainment at his disposal to distract and shield the young Siddhartha from the cold winds of life. At 16, he married a beautiful cousin, Yashodhara, and in time, a son, Rahula, was born. The name Rahula means fetter and gives an indication of the tremor of dissatisfaction Siddhartha was experiencing with his life and the future he was expected to fulfill. The scriptural narrative of Siddhartha's journey outside the mansions, seeing for the first time the four sights: old age, sickness, death, and the wandering mendicant, is a powerful one, whether or not this actually happened in the way described. For it echoes within us all our own wake-up call, our own momentary realization of the impermanence of all sentient life. We catch sight of ourselves in the mirror, see the grey hairs, feel the joints beginning to ache, the energy flagging. Looking back at years of London commuting, out late at the theatre, and then myself getting up early the next morning to spend an hour on a crowded transport system travelling to work, could I do that now? Not a chance. We become ill, sometimes very ill. In time, an unknown, unpredictable time, we will die. My sister's tragically early death from renal failure at the age of 51, 2 years before my mother died, was a powerful lesson in how cause and effect can sometimes throw away the rule book on how things ought to be, or we perceive ought to be. A parent losing a child, albeit an adult child. Yet despite these stark lessons, we still follow well-worn grooves, needy of approval, belonging. For humans are group animals by nature. And so the traditional romantic myth, complete with traditional wedding and traditional family, has not lost its shine. Finding our other half is still seen as the road to meeting something absent in ourselves, reinforcing a sense of who we are. Never mind the social gains of coupledom, an ideal still elevated, even today. Romantic love has its joys, can teach us to open outwards to another, to give wholeheartedly of ourselves. Being part of a family unit, as many a Buddhist parent can vouch for, is a practice of itself, especially a practice of letting go. For children will become adults whose own aspirations may not meet with parental expectation, however much grief this may cause, as Suddhodana, Siddhartha's father, discovered. During my teens and 20s, there were more than a few heated discussions with my own mother about her expectations, rigidly held views on marriage, children, and the feminine ideal, born of her own fears and anxiety for the security and enhancement of her three daughters. The stronger this was spelled out, the more intuitively I fought against it. Everyone deserves nothing less than the freedom to become who they truly are. Views above all else bind us to I, me, mine. Our quest to hold on to people and things pales beside this. Views are at the very core of self-identification. We find safety and affirmation in those who share our perspective, the book club or political allegiances. Any challenge or attack feels deeply personal. History is shaped by views, presented as the answer to all ills. Yet history also tells us that political landscapes oscillate between extremes, swinging back and forth over time, bringing gains and losses in their wake. No one size fits all. So where do we go with these worldly winds? How do we even know where to begin? How can we learn to be with gain and loss? Well, not by trawling the high street or the World Wide Web, however tempting these options may be. Where do we find the resting place, the poise, ease, to hold whatever life throws at us? The chain of causation referred to earlier shows us that in each moment we have a choice. As a result of past karma or actions, we have come into being in the present life with a set of conditions we cannot change. We have a consciousness, a mind and body. We have six senses. From these senses arise contact in whatever form. So we see objects, hear sounds, experience sensation through touch. From contact arises feeling, pleasant, painful, or neutral. Feeling is unavoidable, part and parcel of what it is to be human. How we respond to this feeling will shape what follows. If we allow ourselves to be drawn in by craving, then attachment or grasping, becoming, birth, decay, and death will follow. And round the wheel of samsara we go again. If we can be with this feeling, hold it, see it for what it is, pleasant, painful, or neutral, not become entangled in a narrative of greed, hatred, or delusion. Become bigger. We can begin a journey of faith. joy, rapture, concentration, an upward trajectory towards a new way of being, drawing on resources of kindness and compassion for ourselves, for others. We can change the way we live, disengage from the constricted view of I, me, mine, that craving or aversion brings, whether it is the shiny new car or the grinding headache. Begin to disentangle ourselves from the tightly held grip on a fixed idea, the idea of a fixed self, and see this for the fetter it is, and let go into a path to freedom. The poem Small Boy by Norman McCaig. He picked up a pebble and threw it into the sea, and another, he couldn't stop. He wasn't trying to fill the sea. He wasn't trying to empty the beach. He was just throwing away, nothing else but. Like a kitten playing, he was practicing for the future, when there'll be so many things he'll want to throw away, if only his fingers will unclench and let them go. For many of us coming into contact with Buddhism for the first time, something is missing from our lives. It is telling how popular meditation classes are, here at the Norwich Buddhist Centre and generally within Sri Ratna. For example, at Taraloka, the Women's Retreat Centre in the Shropshire Welsh borders, and Vajraloka, a meditation retreat centre in Wales. Meditation is often the way we initially connect with a different way of being. In quiet, calm conditions, with little in the way of external distractions, we press the pause button, stop chasing our tail. All there is this moment. Of itself, this is immensely freeing. Our minds become clearer and we gain a sense of perspective. Such are the benefits of mindfulness practice that it is increasingly utilised in the health service and education. Teachers have observed a marked difference in the calm and concentration of children taught meditation in schools. Cultivating loving kindness, we find self-acceptance, and from this, an acceptance of the demons we all struggle with. Engaging with positive emotion can inject a brightness into our world. Colours and people look lovelier, and edges are softened with tenderness as anguish and hurt loses its hold. We find what connects us, not what divides us. A sense of shared loss. For years, I took my family, especially my mother, into the fourth stage of my metta-bhavana practice, looking to their qualities, seeing their struggles. Shedding the burden of grief, these days I travel lighter. We can take metta further into the realm of the gods, the Brahma Viharas. We can rejoice in another's good fortune with mudita, sympathetic joy. Bring compassion, karuna, to the suffering of those around us and respond with equanimity, upeksha, skillful engagement with the needs of the given moment. So I found myself in a shrine room in Oxfordshire, New Year's Eve, 1996, on my first retreat, shedding copious tears throughout the evening, letting go into that feeling without resistance. The following day, I felt cleansed, as if some part of me had been set free, the chains of expectation broken. As one door slams shut in our face, so another door opens and invites us in. The Buddha's phrase, ehi passiko, come and see for yourself how my teachings work. And so I did, and continue to. When I was asked to leave Windhorse Trading, a Buddhist team-based right livelihood business, in 2003, it was a painful, jarring experience, both for the team and myself. Yet it focused a spotlight on the daily annihilation through alcohol that had been an unwinnable struggle for many years. Surrender was in sight. I reached out for help and within weeks attended my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. One day at a time, this year we'll see 15 glorious years of sobriety. And so loss becomes gain, carrying the message of recovery into public sector bodies, such as councils, or bringing issues such as addiction into open discussion in sixth form colleges for a seed to be planted for the benefit of all. And the Dharma Tarini, who had the unenviable job of asking me to leave Windhorse, Maitra Devi has become a trusted, valued, loved friend. Similarly, when the phone rang ominously one Monday morning and I learnt that my father had been brutally murdered, my world imploded. Yet by lunchtime the same day, I had booked a place on a forthcoming retreat at Tiruvannamalai, the Women's Retreat Centre in the Brecon Beacons, supporting those in their ordination process. Any doubts as to the future direction of my life had been dispelled in an instant. Not a day passes without thinking of my beloved father. After a life event of that magnitude, there is no way back, only forwards. Naomi Shihab Nye's poem, Kindness. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go. So you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you. How he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. In the heart-rending story of Kissa Gotami, the Buddha's compassionate response is to point Kissa Gotami gently in a direction that will enable her to discover for herself the truth of loss. This was the common human fate. What no words had been able to convey to her own experience of going from door to door had made clear. She understood the law of existence, the law of impermanence and death, within the ever-recurring round of becoming. And for most of us, death, that of a loved one, or our own mortality, is one loss that is hard to turn to. Unpalatable to contemplate on the roller coaster ride of distraction, we would simply rather not go there. In 2006, I went on a bereavement retreat at Taraloka, open to all women. Everyone present shared their experience through group discussions, ritual, meditation, even planning our own funeral. One of the retreatants, a woman of about my age, had a brain tumour and needed the presence of carers. There were no hiding places. Everything felt very real. Far from being morbid or depressing, the whole 7 days was life-enhancing, as if the colour knob on our life screens had been turned up several notches. There was a depth to our shared understanding, to our connections. Another 5 minutes, is that okay? In making a sincere and wholehearted commitment to spiritual practice, transforming ourselves in the light of the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, mixed motives can creep in by stealth that can dilute any gains. We can look for approval or acceptance, particularly from Buddhists we look up to. We can seek to appropriate their qualities, take them on as our own. Dharmacharini Dharmadina, in her talk on Going for Refuge, refers to Stephen Batchelor's having mode and being mode. Having mode is about owning, wanting, acquiring, adding on. So we can speak or act in a way we perceive will comply with how a Buddhist is, thus presenting a facade, keeping hidden or simply blind to those parts of ourselves we would seek to tuck away in a dark corner, hidden from view. Fear of aloneness, rejection, or just long-standing insecurities will hold us back from actualizing who we authentically are, the untapped well of loveliness that is ours. To get to know ourselves, gain an insight into who we are, how we are, we need face the demons of our conditioning with courage and tenacity. In this context, friendships are a strong ally, as are our connections with the Arya Sangha, the unconditioned love and compassion of Amitabha, Ratnasambhava's generosity, Amogha Siddhi's fearlessness, and Akshobhya's imperturbability. These have been invaluable companions in times of self-doubt, when the winds of gain and loss have blown a little too close for comfort. Life experience, especially my father's death, has been pivotal, offering a fleeting insight into how the conditions I exist within are fundamentally impermanent, insubstantial, unsatisfactory. By directing emotional energy, especially grief, which has its own distinctly pervasive quality, in a productive way, practicing the precepts, immersing myself in Dharma study, especially struggling in meditation, giving to friendship, making lifestyle choices that create room for the three jewels at the centre of my mandala, allowing the wisdom and compassion of the Buddhas to grow within, the gains are inexhaustible. The worldly winds teach us about suffering, the causes of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the way leading to the cessation of suffering. The Four Noble Truths, a doorway to freedom in each moment. The Buddha was born as we are born. What the Buddha attained, we too can attain. We can open outwards, embrace every feeling on its own terms. Our body can become a mountain. Our heart can become as deep as the ocean. Our mind can become the sky. Rumi's poem, Quietness. Inside this new love, die. Our way begins on the other side. Become the sky. Take an axe to the prison wall. Escape. Walk out like somebody suddenly born into colour. Do it now. You're covered with thick cloud. Slide out the side. Die and be quiet. Quietness is the surest sign that you've died. Your old life was a frantic running from silence. The speechless full moon comes out now.